Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This is episode 21 of the Crystal Habit Podcast, and I am your host, Megan Marie. We actually are going to do a little bit of a recap podcast this month, as we just came off of and returned from E3 2013. It was an awesome show, especially because of two huge announcements for Square Enix, the reveal of Final Fantasy 15 and Kingdom Hearts 3. As a massive Kingdom Hearts fan and Final Fantasy fan, I admit I was squeeing in the back of the booth as those announcements went live. And while Crystal Dynamics wasn't there showing off anything on the floor, Square Enix was there in full force and had a ton of awesome games to check out. I also had the extreme honor of hosting a new broadcast program called Square Enix Presents at the show. I think it was one of the coolest parts of the show. It was our first ever live broadcast program, and it had tons of awesome content, including new trailers, demos, live interviews, behind the scenes content, making ofs and giveaways. So what I'd actually like to do for this episode of the podcast is run you through some of the cool offerings that we had on the show floor and let you know where you can find out more about games from our sister studios and so on, as well as let you guys listen in on an exciting contribution that Crystal Dynamics made called Crystal Dynamics Uncut. So I think that we should start off our virtual booth tour on a cheery note with Murdered. So Murdered Soul Suspect is actually a brand new IP developed in tandem by Square Enix and Airtight Games, and it falls under the premise that the hardest case to solve is your own murder. It stars Detective Ronan O'Connor, who gets caught up in a violent burglary and meets an untimely end. And he ends up in this world called Dusk, and it's a limbo world. And in order to find his way out and to pass beyond the beyond, I suppose, he has to find out the truth about his killer and bring him to justice. During E3, we did a behind-the-scenes tour of the Murdered Soul Suspect Theater, and also did a gameplay walkthrough live, so make sure to tune in to Square Enix Presents later this week to see those videos uploaded. Murdered Soul Suspect is set to release on the Xbox 360, PS3, and PC in early 2014. Deus Ex was also at the show representing in full force, first up with Deus Ex Human Revolution, the Director's Cut. So the Director's Cut was originally announced for just the Wii U and has some really, really cool functionality that takes advantage of the unique controller. It also has visual improvements, overhauled boss fights, and reinforced combat mechanics. It's considered the ultimate Human Revolution experience. We did announce, however, at E3 that Deus Ex Human Revolution, the Director's Cut, is no longer just exclusive to the Wii U. So while you'll get that cool controller content and tailored content for the Wii U if you decide to pick it up for that platform, it'll also release for the Xbox 360, PS3, PC, and Mac later this year. The second Deus Ex offering at E3 was actually Deus Ex The Fall. The Fall is a standalone title for the iPad that takes place in the same world as Human Revolution. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing two people attached to the project at E3, James Wright, who is the producer at Square Enix Europe on the title, and Jean-Francois Dugas, also known as JF, who's the executive game director on The Fall at Eidos Montreal. If you want to learn more about The Fall and see it running on the iPad, it looks fantastic, and I didn't have a chance to play it, but it looks extremely intuitive and fun. Make sure to check out youtube.com/Square Enix Presents so that you can see the interview and see the game in action. Another tablet title that was actually announced at the show is Blood Mask. Blood Mask is an action RPG set in 19th century Paris where vampires rule the night. Players actually get to be the vampire hunters in order to put a stop to all of the vampires' evil schemes and save the citizens of Paris. I had a chance to interview producer Ritaro Ichimura and assistant producer Kensei Fujinaga about the title. The game has one really cool feature that I especially enjoyed, which actually allows you to put yourself into the game. Through taking a series of three photos, a neutral face, a happy face, and an angry face, you can put your face onto the primary character and watch them react to the game. Blood Mask will release for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch this summer. Next up is Thief, which was a huge point of pride for Square Enix at the show. Thief actually had its own giant theater where representatives from Eidos Montreal played the games for press and attendees alike. As those of you aware of the franchise know, Thief is a first-person stealth action adventure title, and it brings back the classic Thief experience, which is the fantasy of being the master thief. If you haven't played a Thief title before, this is actually a really good place to start. In the demo that we had on the show floor, the population of the city are revolting against the Baron's iron-fisted regime, and the city is burning. Garrett takes this opportunity to infiltrate Northcrest Manor, the Baron's family home, in order to steal a precious gem that he has learned about, called the Heart of the Lion. Thief is currently in development for Windows PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4, with the release window next year. This is a fun one. I also had an opportunity to check out Saints Row 4. Developed by Volition and published by Deep Silver, Square Enix is actually a distribution partner on the title. The Saints are back in the limelight again, and this time they rode their wave of popularity right to the White House. The leader of the Saints is actually sitting pretty in the Oval Office now, and despite eliminating the deficit and ending world hunger, they haven't really faced a challenge like the one just over the horizon, which is the arrival of the Zin Empire. So Zinyak, the leader of the Zin, is probably going to regret his decision to abduct the leaders of the United States, considering they're the most dangerous men and women on the planet. Saints Row 4 will be available August 20 of this year. Also on the show floor was Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix, which is considered the ultimate Kingdom Hearts experience. Remastered in HD, Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix is a compilation of Kingdom Hearts Final Mix, Kingdom Hearts Re Chain of Memories, and also the cinematic scenes from 358 over 2 days. It's going to hit retail on September 10 for the PlayStation 3. And for those of you in North America, you should definitely check out some of the pre-order bonuses because you can get an exclusive art book with some cool sketches that haven't been seen before. A huge, huge point of pride in the Square Enix Presents programming was actually having the opportunity to interview Nomura-san himself about Kingdom Hearts 1.5 Remix, as well as Kingdom Hearts 3. That interview will be live up on youtube.com/Square Enix Presents a little bit later this week. If you're itching for even more nostalgia, Final Fantasy X-X2 HD Remaster is a great game to check out, especially if you missed the original versions. Final Fantasy X-X2 HD Remaster brings together two Final Fantasy favorites with beautifully upgraded graphics. The game is based on international versions, which were previously only released in Japan and Europe, so you're going to get some content that you've never seen before, even if you did play the versions in North America. Final Fantasy X-X2 HD Remaster is going to release for the PlayStation 3 and PS Vita later this year. I actually had the chance to talk to Motomu Toriyama, the director of X-X2 Remastered, as well as Yoshinori Kitase, the producer on Lightning Returns, about X-X2 HD Remaster. Make sure to tune in to Square Enix Presents on the YouTube channel if you want to check that out. There's actually a cool little exclusive tidbit where we got to see Lightning from Final Fantasy XIII, Lightning Returns, in Yuna's garb from Final Fantasy X. We had a lot of eager fans come and check out Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII on the show floor. It's actually the conclusion of Lightning's story, where you have 13 days to save the world. Featuring new weapons, player customization, and new battle abilities, it's a race against time to understand your ultimate destiny. Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII will be available on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 on February 11, 2014. We had a couple of awesome opportunities to discuss Lightning Returns during Square Enix Presents, including the aforementioned interview with Yoshinori Kitase and Motomu Toriyama. A fun addition to this programming, though, was an interview with Allie Hillis, who's Lightning's voice actress. I had the opportunity to ask her a couple of questions and even have her read some of Lightning's most famous lines live. Make sure to check out that program at Square Enix Presents also. Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, was definitely a showstopper at the booth. Those who stopped by had a chance to check out our new demo. The game has been completely rebuilt from the ground up with a focus on refining systems, gameplay, and the overall player experience. A really fun addition was this battle arena, where players had the chance to team up and try to beat Ifrit in a pickup group. If they did in less than 10 minutes, they got this really cool free polo. Square Enix Presents had a ton of programming about Final Fantasy XIV, including the Final Fantasy XIV Producer Letter Live. That's a really, really piece of popular content, and we had it actually in both Japanese and then also in English at a later time. Our resident Realm Reborn experts also did a Realm Reborn battle event recap and community update. So again, I know I've been repeating myself a lot, but make sure to visit youtube.com/Square Enix Presents if you want to see those programs. As you can see, we had a ton of awesome games on the show floor and equally exciting announcements. And once more for good measure, you can check out all of the programming from Square Enix Presents at youtube.com/Square Enix Presents. Now I'm actually going to share with you the piece of content that we created for the programming, which is called Crystal Dynamics Uncut. So it's true that original ideas and stellar tools make for great games, but we all feel that at the heart of development are talented and passionate people. We wanted to showcase this in a feature called Crystal Uncut, which gave the team the opportunity to just sit down in front of a web camera and answer some really candid questions about developing the game, highs and lows, and really whatever they wanted to share. In this feature, you'll be hearing from Daryl Gallagher, head of studio, Danielle Bisson, game director, Brennick Adams, the assistant art director, Brian Horton, senior art director, John Stafford, the senior narrator designer, Cam Zambell, producer, Jason Lacroix, the lead rendering engineer, Remy Lacoste, the lead camera designer, Daniel Neuberger, the game director, Noah Hughes, the creative director, Jack Grillo, the senior sound designer, Rachel Babcock, the studio administrator, and myself. I think you'll actually be able to identify most of the voices based on past interviews. So I actually have a favor to ask of you. If you like what you hear and would appreciate this becoming a regular feature throughout future development at Crystal Dynamics, please let us know. You can tweet at Crystal Dynamics. You can respond in the blog comments. You can send an email to community@crystald.com. Just let us know what you think. And if you'd like to have more of this sort of candid connection with the teams at Crystal in the future. Enjoy.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what it was like to join Crystal Dynamics for the first time. I got out of development. I literally left development for a while and was in the publishing side, but I always had this desire to work on a great game. You know, it had been my goal. So when Daryl Gallagher called me, we'd had a relationship. We'd been talking over the years about the possibility of working together. The timing worked out perfectly, and moved my family up to the Bay Area, and we started working on Tomb Raider. And it was super exciting, because for me, I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan of Tomb Raider since the PlayStation era, PlayStation 1 era. And the idea of reimagining it was both scary and exciting. I felt like Lara Croft was at that place where she deserved to see a new chapter in her story, and to have that opportunity to work with a really talented group of people that really knew this franchise coming at it from a fan's perspective, it was quite an honor.
So what made me want to join the Tomb Raider team? I was working in Los Angeles at the time when I got the opportunity to move up to Crystal to work on Tomb Raider, and it really excited me to think about working on one of the best known franchises out there. And I was particularly excited to see how I can bring my sound design aesthetic to the world that was being built.
What made me join the Tomb Raider project? One of the things that was very important for me is working on something that I really care about. And what made me join that, I was working on a previous company on other big projects. And for me, Tomb Raider was something that was very personal, was something that I had a special relationship with, because I started as a fan. I knew that when I was a young adult and when it came out on the PlayStation, because I first played it on PlayStation, unlike other people, it was PC and things like that. I mean, it was a PlayStation thing. It was my favorite game. Some of my friends were actually wanted to, we were sharing the PlayStation. Some of them were playing other type of game. For me, it was Tomb Raider. So that's one of the things that was very important for me, was being part of that great franchise. And also the team. I know that the team, I knew people that was actually working on the team, and I knew that they were very strong, very solid. And for me, I knew that this new game would be great. And that's why I want to be part of that, represent how I could bring what I knew to that franchise. And I'm very proud of what we accomplished, and I'm very happy of being part of that franchise and that team.
So I guess I'd say my greatest fear when I joined the Tomb Raider team was probably that I was afraid to really screw up one of gaming's great franchises. A lot of responsibility was sort of placed into my hands and other people's hands. with this essentially a gaming icon. We were really recreating who Lara was and what she looked like, which mattered a lot more to me because as a rendering engineer, I'm more responsible for the look and feel of things. There's a great fear there that people wouldn't like what we did. It's a fear that gradually melted away as we get further and further in with development. But when I first joined the company, it was something that I had to think about. Like, can I do this? Am I really up to the task of tackling such a huge gaming icon? And can I really help and contribute in the reinvigoration of a franchise?
So my greatest fear on working on the new Tomb Raider really was reimagining something that was so near and dear to my heart. The fear really being able to recapture the spirit of what Tomb Raider is to myself and the fans, but also improving in areas where we needed to improve to keep the content relevant.
What was my greatest fear on working with Tomb Raider? That's a good one. I represent, basically when I came in as a game director, I represent a little bit the new vision of the game. While people here, a lot of people were, you know, working on Tomb Raider for a while, and like for example, Noah would represent, you know, the what Tomb Raider was. So the new versus the old, and I think for me that was the greatest fear. And at the beginning, I was not seeing that. I was like, I'm going to create this all new things, and I want to make this game about Tomb Raider, but completely new. And then, you know, negotiating, knowing things and talking about, but also the fans and things, I really realized that I should not be tempering in a way that will completely change that. And so the greatest fear for me was adding new features and new way of approaching the franchise that would be, you know, will transform to a point where it doesn't feel like a Tomb Raider. And that was my biggest fear, as how can I, you know, touch something that is almost heavy, a holy stature, where I can, you know, touch and people are like, what, this is not a Tomb Raider. And that, I think I would say that was the greatest fear for me.
So my biggest fear working on Tomb Raider was that I would somehow personally disappoint the fans, or that the game wouldn't be what they expected or what they wanted, or not Tomb Raider-y enough. And I believed in the vision of Tomb Raider, you know, from the time that I saw it at Game Informer. If I didn't believe on it, I wouldn't have come over to Crystal Dynamics. I wouldn't have uprooted my life. And I did believe in that vision wholeheartedly, but there was always this fear that maybe you were too close to something, and maybe the fact that you saw the long hours that everybody was working, and that you saw all that effort and the heart and soul and passion poured into something, and that maybe it colored your vision a little bit. Maybe it left you a little bit biased. Maybe you were too close to it. So there was nerves, certainly, right to the last minute, right till those reviews came out, right until the gamers got the hands. And I would sit there on the forums and read people's reactions, and I was so relieved and so proud to have people say and express that they were so happy and impressed with the game, and that it felt like a Tomb Raider experience, and that we did the franchise right. So it was an amazing feeling, and it was wonderful to have those fears finally alleviated.
So one of the things we do, like specifically for the art team, we have a weekly painting class. So we bring models in. Some people draw, most people paint. It was one of those things that sort of was a request. A couple of the artists were big fans of traditional art. So it was a great thing that the company decided to sponsor. So they pay for the model. All we have to do is show up, model comes in, and we have a 3-hour painting session. So at some point, I'd like to share some of the work that the team's doing when they feel up to it, but really proud of the work. It just keeps our skills sharp. A lot of us come from a traditional background, and it was one of those things that we wanted to keep going in the studio, is to make sure that not only are we good digital artists, but we keep our painting skills going, our drawing skills going.
So one of the day-to-day activities for me that was entertaining was taking pictures of the team. I'm a photographer as well as a writer and a narrative designer. And so for a large chunk of the development, I brought my camera in and just kind of stalked the team and quietly took pictures as they were doing their work. And it was a nice way to kind of remember for my own sake all the hard work everyone put in and you know, just a great way to capture a moment in time. So that's one of the things I like about the studio is everybody is an expert and does their own thing kind of separately. But when you kind of look at it all together, it really draws a picture of a team really working together and doing something special.
So some of the fun things that we did around the office to kind of keep morale up was we had our game director, Dan Masson, who was working with me closely and the combat team, developing all our combat for the game. We would do plenty of Photoshops of Dan Masson, and you would see him probably plastered in behind desk chairs to our mobile carts to play the game, to meeting rooms. And still now I'll walk around after the shipping of Tomb Raider and you'll see Dan photoshopped in some funny outfit or some crazy hair. And it just kind of puts a smile on your face and brings back great memories of actually developing the game.
There is some fun day-to-day activity we do in the office. We have a bottle of wine from a winery called Rochambeau. And what we do is we use the bottle as a trophy. And in order to win that bottle, we need to play a rock, paper, scissors game. And the winner each day can keep the bottle at his desk and and keep it until someone else challenges him.
So some of the day-to-day activities that we had here available to our staff during launch and during any time here at Crystal was we have a gym on site. So through the gym, we're able to do rock climbing, we're able to work out, we're able to go swimming, but also they have a bunch of team sports that allow you to play against other companies within our complex. So here at Crystal, we actually have a volleyball team, we have a softball team called Base Raiders, and we actually have a dodgeball team called Balls of Duty. Besides having those events and activities available on hand, we also would do weekly barbecues for the staff, where the leadership team and the leads on our dev side would barbecue for the staff and serve them and show their appreciation for all their hard work and dedication.
I think the single biggest feature that I wished we had kept in was probably the horse, which was cut very, very early, but it was one of those things that I felt could have been really, really cool if we had kept it in. It was very complex to do, and ultimately we really couldn't pursue it for this one, but the horse was the one thing that I wish we hadn't cut. Things like the turret, which some of you may have seen in some videos, we had a turret that was cut, I was happy to cut, but the horse, not so much.
One of the features that I was saddest to have to cut in Tomb Raider was some of the benefits from hunting that we had played early on with survivalist mechanics and had worked hunting into the health system. In the end, we didn't really get a version that we liked a lot, but it was an idea that we were very compelled by and in the end was sad to have to cut.
Originally, the ending of the game was different, and it was something I was involved with and I was really attached to. But we had focus tests and information from a variety of sources that indicated that it needed to be changed. And so I'm partly bummed, but I'm also glad that we changed it because it was the right decision. But I'm curious to see what people would have thought if the original ending of Tomb Raider had made it to the final cut.
There was one feature on Tomb Raider, the early days, the really early days that I was a part of, that I thought of to be the most awesome thing that we could have done. Now, it was a different game back then, but let me set it up for you. We had a little bit of a more open world approach. There was a lot more terrain to cover. So we went with a couple different vehicles, one of which was an old World War II motorcycle. Another one was a horse. And eventually we had a bug where the horse was riding Lara, who was riding the motorcycle. And I thought that that feature would have been strong. It would have been a good Easter egg. But I thought that some of the horse stuff we were doing was really interesting. And I was kind of bummed to see it go. In the long run, it was the best, you know, choice. But the horse riding Lara, riding the motorcycle was phenomenal. So one of the highs for me on Tomb Raider was when we delivered the E3 2012 demo. That demo had a level of detail and quality that that was real proof to me that we were on the verge of something special. And a real low for me was when we were finishing up the localization process. That was a huge workload. And at that point, the work itself isn't terribly creative. It's more file management, and that was kind of a creative low for me during the project.
So my highest high, definitely making Tomb Raider, was the big E3 unveiling of Tomb Raider that we had. It was really awesome to be able to be the person showing the world the great work the team had done up to that point and blowing a few minds. And my lowest low, I think, definitely was having to take time off just as we were entering Alpha to deal with some personal issues. It was really hard leaving the team at that time, but they did an amazing job getting the game together, which led to another one of my highs, which was being able to come back with still some time to make some meaningful difference on the final product.
You will get into those pits where you'll be miserable and you're unhappy and everything looks like it's not working and you think you just want to quit. But you bond with your team members, the people around you, and those are really the people that pull you back out, and together you kind of climb out of the muck and all of the bad stuff that is going on. And when you get out of it and you turn around and you look back at what you've created, and you see like this phenomenal experience that was crafted, something that most of us have never done anywhere else, and you get this incredible sense of accomplishment, and just this, it just fills you with pride, and it sort of makes all of it worthwhile. I mean, there were times when we really, really hit some low points. But then when you turn around afterwards and look at the final product and what came out of it and people's reactions to all of the work that we've done, it really does make it worthwhile. It really does.
So one of the biggest things that motivated me to give my all through the long nights and weekends and many years of making this game really was a sense that we could actually make a game that made a difference, not only to the studio and ourselves, but also to the industry as a whole, and hopefully all the Tomb Raider fans around the world too. But it was a sense that this was going to be bigger than any one game, sense that this was not going to be another game, it was going to be a special game. And that really, really motivated me to make sure that we did everything we could possible to pull it off.
Gosh, I can tell you, I think the thing that kept us all going was just the great personalities that the guys had. They were really devoted and very passionate about what they were doing. So they were willing to put in those extra miles, and it just got to those nights where it was like a lot of fun, a lot of goofing around, and a lot of hard work that I guess those kept me going, because I really wanted the guys to succeed, and they did awesome what they did.
The thing that really motivated me during the long days and nights of Tomb Raider is the idea of making something special. That I think everybody at the studio really thinks Tomb Raider has such potential as a franchise, and we really wanted to see the best game that we could possibly make out there on the shelves.
What really motivated me to work hard and harder is that I knew we had something very special in our hands, and that I had the dream of pushing the boundaries of how we can tell story with cameras in video games. So every time I thought about that dream, it kept me alive.
The thing that kept me going through the long nights and weekends on this project on Tomb Raider over the many years that I was on it was being able to work with such a tremendous team of talented people who, despite all the ups and downs that we had and the iterations and all the things that went horribly wrong, which they did often, when we found the right answer, it was really easy to rely on them to provide support back and forth, because we were all interested in making something great. So I think when I look back on what got me through all the harder times, it was the people who I work with and their talent level and our motivation to make something that was great.
So the thing that really motivated me and kept me going through all the long nights and weekends on Tomb Raider really is the thing that keeps me going when I'm making any game, which is thinking of the moment that the player, the person we're making the game for, after they go and they spend their hard-earned money on the game and put it in for the first time, what their takeaway is going to be. I've definitely bought plenty of games in my life where I put in the disc, I'm really excited about the game, it's all been highly hyped, and I hate the game. And my greatest fear is creating a game that that is how the end player ends up feeling. So that's what keeps me working, that's what keeps me going, is making it as good as I can possibly make it in the time that I have.
My favorite memory of working on Tomb Raider is one that I'm super fortunate to have experienced, and it's never anything I really thought I'd be doing, but I had the extreme luck of being able to tour and show Tomb Raider off to fans at community events around the world, and one of the places I demoed the game was Paris, which in and of itself is amazing. But I had an event, a community event one night, and then the next day the fans came back and we all went to the Louvre together, and it just blew my mind that I was here with other Tomb Raider fans. We all were united by our love of the game and the franchise. And then we were walking through this incredible museum, literally walking through tombs together. We really enjoyed the ancient Egyptian exhibit, obviously, but there was so much to see there. And I felt like it was a place that, you know, Lara would obviously have been giddy to explore.
So my favorite memory for working on Tomb Raider was when I finalized the sounds for the submachine gun. I'd been working on that on and off the whole time I'd been here, and this I finalized them back in October, and it was one of those moments where I feel like I got the perfect sound for that particular weapon. It had been kind of eluding me for a while, and right at this point I'm really, really pleased with it, and have had a lot of really positive response for the sounds for the weapons.
One of my favorite moments on Tomb Raider, morale was low, really low, and I felt like I had to motivate. And the best way to motivate is to provide some type of comedic relief. So Brian Horton, the senior art director on Tomb Raider, was nice enough to provide me an image of himself, and I found one of Lara, and I created what I would consider to be one of the greatest Photoshop mock-ups I've ever done in my career. Unfortunately, I can't show it here. I'm not saying it's not going to be posted on my blog anytime soon. I would never say that. I would never say to go to Brunock.com. Never mind. But it was great. It rallied people, and I think it motivated the team to realize that even through the more difficult times, that we were still able to laugh at one another.
My favorite memory working on Tomb Raider would have to be launch week. It was filled with so many surprises and so much excitement among the studio. We had 2 weeks of swag items, so every day we gave away a swag item to the staff. But ultimately, I would say it was the midnight opening or sell of Tomb Raider. There's probably 30 of us, staff members, dev side, that went out to a local GameStop and actually had probably about 50 community members and fans of Tomb Raider there, celebrating with us on the launch of Tomb Raider. And just seeing the staff interact with the community and seeing the excitement on the fans' faces is something that is completely priceless.
So my favorite memory working on Tomb Raider, I think, has to be the launch party, where we had everybody together, all in the same spot, with alcohol, having a great time, feeling this huge sense of accomplishment, and bringing their significant others along to celebrate with us. And it was just a great event where we all felt this sense of achievement. We were very, very proud. And I looked out at a sea of smiling faces who were having such a great time to celebrate their success. And it really was a highlight for me to see all of that come together and also all of us be in one place celebrating.
So someone I'd like to thank is my daughters, because working on Tomb Raider has given me a chance to hopefully create a really powerful female protagonist in video games. And I want my daughters to play games, and I want them to have someone to look up to. So kind of thanking them for motivating me and giving me that sort of perspective. I think it's an important perspective. I think girls need to play games and need to have some powerful heroes to look up to. From the very start, it was made clear by the lead designer and the artistic director that as a lead camera designer, I could fully express myself. And I'm very thankful for their support, because I could just push the limits and the boundaries of how we could tell the story with the camera in the video game.
Firstly, I want to thank the studio, because it was not easy. It was an easy decision. Like, I knew that this is where I needed to be and this is the project I needed to work on in leaving Game Informer and moving across the country, but it wasn't easy to do, you know, so leaving my family was very difficult because we're extremely close. But it was, like I said, it was the right decision. So first, thank you to my family for letting me go, for letting me follow my own path and being so incredibly supportive along the way. Thank you to the studio for making me feel welcome, for making me feel at home. And thank you to my boyfriend for always being supportive and for taking care of my cats while I was gone for 30 days at a time, making sure they didn't die. Love you for that.
Who I would like to thank inside or outside the studio, I would say that I would like to thank my wife and my kids, because I was living in Montreal, you know, and we have our families there and friends, and we speak French. This is our first language. We're French Canadian. And she was willing to come and sacrifice her own career to support me here. She was a speech and language pathologist. She worked as a speech and language pathologist. She had to let go of that work to come here, supporting me in that journey, which was a very intense and very big journey for us. And I would like seriously to thank her, because she's a very special person and I love her very much. So thank you very much, Melanie. I love you.
The first thing I wanted to say to the Tomb Raider community is thanks. I think it sounds a little cliche, but we really do have such an amazing group of fans out there. And for me, it's such an honor to be able to work on Tomb Raider for you guys. And I've been inspired by your passion and your ideas throughout the process. And so as here we are at the end of it, and I think it's important to really just say thank you for being along for the ride and for all your kind words after we were finished.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 21 of the Crystal Habit Podcast. Next month, we're actually going to start a series of features where we're going to take a look at what it takes to get into the game industry. We're going to start with a high-end overview of from different talent at the studio. We'll then continue on with subsequent features that break down specialties. So what do you need for your art portfolio? What if you want to get into animation? And so on. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Until next time.